Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome once again to the program Connecting Faith. And as we talk about in the title, it's Connecting Faith to Life. Our hope is that on a regular basis, we can talk about understanding a biblical worldview and how that should inform how we live day by day, how we can take biblical principles and apply them to a daily life situation. And we've got a great discussion today, and I know you're going to enjoy hearing our guest, and hopefully you'll want to interact with us. In fact, Ryan, I was thinking, before we introduce Greg to our listeners and welcome him back to the program, we're going to talk today about how we can discuss our Christian convictions in a world that is not always inviting to that. And it's easy to sort of get, well, maybe we don't want to be argumentative, but we want to, how do we stand up for what we believe?
Absolutely. It's particularly intimidating, I think, in 2014 to know, like, what tone, not only what do I say, but what tone do I take? True. When do I say it?
Yeah. So I'm thinking if you have had a situation or circumstance maybe recently, or maybe it's been something that has been sort of seared into your memory and you remember, there was a time when, someone challenged me about an aspect of my faith and I didn't really know how to respond. It was uncomfortable for me. So we want to talk about those situations and circumstances and would love to have you give us a call, even let us know. Maybe just to pose it as a question or say, here is my experience. And we'll get our guests to offer some, here's some ways that we might have done that differently or next time kind of thing.
Excellent.
Sound good? Well, my guest today started out thinking that he was too smart to become a Christian and ended up giving his life for the defense of the Christian faith. It's been a central theme of Greg Kochel's teaching, speaking and writing. Is that the Christianity can compete in the marketplace of ideas when it's properly understood and properly articulated. Greg Kochel holds degrees in both apologetics and philosophy. He's spoken on dozens of university and college campuses. He's hosted his own radio talk show now for, Greg, 25 years yesterday.
That's right. Yesterday was my 25th anniversary, so actually it was my 24th anniversary, so I'm starting my 25th today with your show, Neil.
Wow, so you started out, you were doing radio as a four-year-old then, right? Is that kind of how that's the way I always like to say that? Sure. Well, Greg, he's the founder and president of Stand to Reason and serves as an adjunct professor of Christian apologetics at Biola University. He's written several books, and the one that we're going to reference today is called Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. And if you happen to hear Breakpoint this week, a couple weeks ago, you heard Greg on with John Stone Street, and we're just happy to have him back. We had him on here a few months back, and it was just a fascinating discussion. So veteran broadcaster and apologist Greg Kochel with us today. And Greg, maybe a word about Stand to Reason. And we just mentioned at the outset, you start out thinking you're too smart to become a Christian.
Right.
Maybe a little of your personal story first. I don't know if we got that last time.
Yeah, well, I don't know that we did, but I'm just 40 years a Christian now and 20 years in Stand to Reason. So those numbers are easy for me to remember, keep track of, at 63 years old right now. So, though I thought I was too smart to become a Christian, it's curious that I wasn't like a lot of people who kind of went after the Christian faith, tried to disprove it, and then were compelled by the evidence. That wasn't my style. That wasn't what happened with me. My younger brother is the one who led me to Christ, and it wasn't largely with an apologetics kind of witness. However, it was clear that it was not – Christianity wasn't just a preference issue. I didn't become a Christian because I thought it was my flavor. I'd like it and try them, you like it, and that kind of thing. No, I was convinced that Christianity was actually true. And therefore, when I gave my heart to Christ and my life to Christ in 1973, I knew that he wanted all of me, and I was there to serve him with the rest of my life. And so that really set the tone. But I was very interested in the apologetics issues from the very beginning, because people would challenge me on my convictions, and then what would I say? And so I began to study, and then as I studied more, I began to teach on this and speak on this. And then 20 years ago, halfway through my Christian life from this state now, I realized that maybe the best way I could be using my time — I was in full-time ministry at the time at a local church — but maybe the best way to use my capabilities and my interest was to start an organization that would train Christians to think more carefully about their convictions, and then in a thoughtful, gracious but incisive way, engage others with the Christian worldview. And that was the birth of Stand to Reason. And our goal was, actually, there were two problems I was seeking to address. One of them is that most Christians were very shallow in their views, their understanding of their own convictions of classical Christianity, and how to defend those views in the context of an increasingly hostile culture. The second thing is, not just was there this shallowness, mile wide and an inch deep, but there was kind of a shrillness. Christians struck me as not very confident, and consequently they would get more argumentative and combative, and these kinds of discussions aren't productive. So I wanted to try to bring something else to the table in an organization that would give more depth in our thoughtful Christianity, and also a technique and a tactic, a capability to engage in a very genial and diplomatic fashion. And those were the sentiments that gave birth to Stand to Reason, now 20 years running, Neil.
Well, you mentioned giving depth and a thoughtful approach. I know that you talk in your book and in, I guess, your other books as well, that you know there's something to be said for using our mind and our reason. But maybe before that, talk a little bit about, are there verses that have sort of informed your thinking, and maybe just as you've developed the ministry for engaging in conversations about our convictions?
Yeah. Yes. There's a classic verse that most people who think of this will bring forth. That's 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15. Sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense for everyone who asks you to give an answer for the hope that's within you. And so this is apologia, the defense there, and where the word apologetics come from. That's a very standard verse. But I'll give you a couple of others that really have helped me. One of them is in 1 Corinthians. Make that 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 3 and 5 through 5. And Paul says that we have spiritual weapons. The weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but they are divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. And then he gives us an idea in the next verse what he's talking about when he talks about these weapons. He said, we are casting down speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God, and we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. Now, here Paul is talking about spiritual weapon that is a well-informed mind that is using the truth in an effective way to tear down the speculative theories that have been raised up in culture against the knowledge of God, and then having our own minds renewed so that we are thinking Christianly. We are thinking like Christ would think about the world, having our thoughts captive to the obedience of Christ. So there's a passage that a lot of people don't think about that really emphasizes the importance of not only thinking properly about things, but addressing the false ideas of culture that get in the way of people taking Christianity seriously, and, as Paul puts, tearing them down. So here's a verse that deals with substance. Let's go after those issues, Paul says, and let's make them look as foolish as they are. However, there's a way that we have to engage. And here I'm going to take Paul's exhortation from Colossians chapter 4, verse 5 and 6. And they're excellent. It's an excellent guideline. It's actually more than a guideline. It's a command. But here's what he says. He says, conduct yourselves with wisdom towards outsiders, making the most of the opportunity. Let your words always be with grace, seasoned as it were with salt, so that you know how to respond to each person. Now, this is advice, Neil, that I have taken very seriously in the tactics book that you mentioned, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions, because in that book, I outline an approach that allows you to follow Paul's advice there, that we conduct ourselves with wisdom, we are gracious in our interactions, but we are trying to be sensitive to the individual circumstances, the individual thinking of the person we're talking with. Those are the verses that I trade on most. There's a lot others that you could show for defense of using good arguments. Jesus used arguments. John wrote the Gospel of John to give an argument for the fact that Jesus was the Messiah, the Son of God. I mean, that's in John 20, the last couple of verses there. He tells exactly why he wrote the Gospel. Paul reasoned with people constantly. We see that in Acts 16, Acts 17, Acts 18, Acts 19. And people were persuaded by the arguments that he offered. So we learn that apologetics, or giving a rationale, is a powerful, spiritually significant tool that God has directed us to use in engaging other people. And I don't think we use them enough, frankly. Jesus used arguments all the time, and so did the other apostles.
And I, so maybe just a word about arguments, because people hear that and go, well, I don't want to argue. So,
yeah, well, we thank you for that request for clarification. Now, when I say argument, I mean taking a principled position and having reasons for it. That's what I mean. I don't mean having a fight, having a quarrel. In fact, Paul tells Timothy that as a bondservant of Christ, we are not to be quarrelsome. We're not to be having fights of that kind, but rather patient when wronged. So we are to go into the enterprise kind of with an attitude of genial or friendly diplomacy, but we are to make our case. One of the other guys that stand to reason, J. Warner Wallace, he wrote the book Cold Case Christianity. He's a former cold case homicide detective. And he says that Christians should be case makers. That is, we are trying to argue, we're trying to give reasons for a particular point of view. We make the case. And that's what I have in mind when I say argument. I don't mean fight or quarrel.
Good word, and we've got more good words and good reasons to review today with Greg Kokel. Greg is the founder and president of Stand to Reason. You can find out more about them on their website, str.org. Greg has written a number of books, including Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair, Precious Unborn Human Persons, and Tactics, a Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. In a moment, we'll talk more with Greg and talk about convictions. So what do we mean by Christian convictions? Do we know the difference between a conviction and a preference? And we'll get to that more. And he mentioned the word diplomacy. We're going to come back and circle around on that as well. It's all ahead here on Connecting Faith. You want to join the conversation. Again, as we mentioned right at the outset of the program, maybe you've had a situation where someone has, pushed back on something and you didn't feel like you maybe handled it well, or didn't know what to say, didn't know how to say it, or just would like to get some clarification. If you've got a story, an illustration, we'd love to have you join in the conversation. You can do so on the phone right now at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484.
We know prayer is a great habit to be into, but does it ever feel like that it's just that, a habit? How can we go from saying rote prayers to becoming a dangerous player in God's army? Author and speaker Stormy Omardian will join us to answer that question with her book, Prayer Warrior.
At 7:40, we'll talk about the fact that God has given us all gifts, but sometimes we need a little help putting them all together. We'll talk with Joseph James Slawick. He's written the book Ingredients to Success, and he'll help us redeem our talents for the Lord.
Join us for Thursday's Faith Radio Mornings.
Has the polar vortex plunged you into a case of the midwinter blues?
Break out of your routine and the house to experience the warmth of A Midsummer Night's Dream, Shakespeare's classic comedy presented by University of Northwestern Theater. Performances are February 26th through March 1st at 7 p.m. in Maranatha Hall on the Northwestern campus.
Beat the Blahs with The Bard and purchase tickets today at unwtickets.com. That's unwtickets.com. University of Northwestern, St. Paul.
Sing to you. Let my life song sing.
want our lives to reflect Christ, not only in our actions, but in our words as well. And we're learning some ways that we can communicate more effectively, discuss our Christian convictions. We're referencing a book written by our guest today, Greg Kokel, Tactics, a Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. Greg is founder and president of Stand to Reason. He also serves as adjunct professor of Christian apologetics at Biola. He holds MA degrees in both apologetics and philosophy, and speaks regularly on university campuses and has his own radio program. He's joining us today on Connecting Faith. And Greg, I want to talk a little bit about the title of the book, Tactics, a Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. Most believers, are they clear about a conviction versus maybe a preference or even a political position?
Yeah, I'm using the word conviction as a synonym for the word faith. In other words, a game plan for discussing your Christian faith. But I think that the word faith has been compromised in the English language, in Western culture. So when I say the word faith now, people subconsciously want to add other words to it, modifiers like blind or leap of. And I do not mean to communicate that notion when I talk about my own faith. So I want people to realize that what I'm talking about is the point of view that I have become convinced of, that I actually think is true. I'm not talking about my religious wishful thinking. I am not talking about my preferences, like I like Jesus, you like Buddha. Can't we all get along? Because they're just different flavors after all, and that's all there is to it. No, I think that there are worldviews that are there. The world is a certain way. Let's put it that way. And Jesus got it right. He got reality right, and therefore the other views that contradict him are going to be false views, and it really matters if you get this right. When I talk about my convictions, the reason I use that word is I want people to understand that I'm not coming to this discussion sharing preferences like dessert preferences. I'm not talking about insulin. I'm sorry, I'm not talking about ice cream. I'm talking about insulin kinds of things. Now, it certainly is in principle possible I'm mistaken about my view. But my first thing is I don't want people to be mistaken about the kind of view that I'm having. And that is, I'm talking about reality. I'm not just talking about my feelings. And I think the word convictions captures that better than the word faith. Principally because the word faith, I think, has been corrupted the way it's being used now. And so this is why I just go with that convictions, and people, they just has a little different feeling for it. You can have convictions about political things. You can have convictions about religious things. You can have convictions about all kinds of different things. But notice when people have convictions, those convictions are things that they think are actually true, you know, not just the things that they personally like. They're contending for it. They're arguing for it. And that's the way I approach the whole question of ultimate issues. Does God exist? Is there a right and wrong? What is the right and wrong about critical issues? If God exists, what does he want from us? What's man's problem? What's the solution? Where does Jesus fit in? I think there are right answers to this. And this is why I want to contend with people, explain them, engage them regarding convictions and not just my feelings.
We'll get into talking about some of the ways to engage in a moment, but it reminded me, I guess, that I think as I was reading in the book again, that it seem surprising sometimes that so many people believe positions or statements without a lot of thought. I mean, when you've been able to raise up those, I guess, you know, using some of those weapons and those sort of lofty ideas, that there's not a lot to them. I mean, are most people just, they've just heard it, so they assume that it's true and haven't really thought about it themselves?
Neil, that is a great observation. I think that most people, and this is across the board, both sides of the aisle on this one, they believe things that they are socialized to believe. And what I mean by that is in their environment, their community, their friends, relatives, everything, they absorb the beliefs that are the standard beliefs of their culture, and they don't assess them. They just absorb that everybody else believes them, so they must be true. And somebody said, Socrates, Aristotle, I don't know, that an unexamined life is not worth living. Now, I don't think this means you got to pick at everything, but when it comes to ultimate issues and people believe their religious views simply because they were raised that way, that strikes me as not a very good reason for an adult to hold a religious point of view. I think they should hold religious views because they actually think that they're true. And this requires that they think a little bit about them, about why they think they're true. Give you an example of what I'm talking about. I had a student come up to me once and say, you know, I was challenged on campus about this. Somebody said, well, everything's relative. And they said, well, how do I respond to that? How do I deal with that? Now, my first point that I made to him is that you don't try to refute the other person's statement without requiring some clarification. He has been taught, or he's absorbed in his culture, that everything's relative. But I bet you he didn't even know what that word means. He just knows it's a way to dismiss Christians. Now, he might have an inkling about what it means, but to have a very rich sense of it, probably not. And that's why you should always ask the person who says everything's relative, you should ask them this question: what do you mean by that? Now, it's not a hostile question. It's a request for more information. I know what relative means. I wrote a book on it, Neil. You just mentioned the title a few moments ago. So I know what it means, but I don't know that person knows what it means. I want to know what he thinks it means before I can go further in the conversation, and certainly before I begin to refute him or object or go against his point. Oh, no, the Bible's an absolute. And then he says one thing, I say the opposite, and we're at a standstill. But if instead I say to him, really, everything's relative, what do you mean by that? Well, now the ball's in his court, right? No pressure on me. I'm all ears. I want to hear what he has to say. And he might have something more to say, and that's good because I want to get more detail before I can go further. Chances are, though, he won't have a whole lot more to say. He'll stammer around a bit because he's never really thought about what it means for everything to be relative. Incidentally, Neil, some of your listeners might have picked up on this. When he says that everything is relative, well, the statement everything's relative is part of everything, isn't it? And that would make his own statement relative, whatever that means. And so there's a potential problem just in the way he stated his statement. There's a potential contradiction built in. And I'm going to want to probe that a little bit before I take any responsibility to try to refute his view. I'm going to let him do a lot of the heavy lifting. And my questions, and we teach these questions, I teach the questions in the book on tactics, those questions are going to put the ball back in his court in an appropriate way and make my job a lot easier.
And we'll, here on the other side of the break, we'll have time to kind of review those and some illustrations of those as well. We've got a couple minutes left. I know in the book you talk about oftentimes you have, you know, maybe about 10 seconds or so to kind of engage the conversation or to respond and get it sort of moving in the right direction. So talk about, is this the best way to sort of, in whatever the situations, you got 10 seconds to ask a question?
Yeah, what I'm citing there are circumstances that present themselves in our lives, and we all have had these, where something comes up in the conversation that has the potential of being spiritually productive for us. And boom, there it is. Somebody makes a comment. Well, there is no God. It's irrational. You know, there's no evidence. None of the arguments for God work. Okay, boom, there it is. And you're sitting there, and the question is, what do you say next? I just suggest you got 10 seconds to take advantage of that opportunity before it passes you by. So what are you going to do? Now, you could say, no, you're wrong. There is a God. The Bible says so. But that's not going to be productive, I guarantee you, not that approach. And so what I've suggested is, if you have questions that you can toss in there, that's going to get the conversation moving. So the person says, there's no God. I might say, what do you mean by God? That is, what kind of God don't you believe in? Do you not believe in an old man with a beard up in the sky somewhere, sitting on a throne in outer space? I don't believe in that God either. Do you mean no personal God of organized religion, but possibly some kind of spiritual force? Or do you mean nothing outside of the material realm? Those are all possibilities. But notice how instead of me getting shut down like, oh my gosh, now it's my turn to refute him, his statement, which is rather bold, is an opportunity for me to ask a question that tosses the ball back in his court. Believing in God is irrational. Oh, really? What's irrational about it? Now it's his turn.
We'll
make sense of his claim.
We'll take turns
there, you know,
here coming up in a moment and review the questions again. In fact, there's a wonderful old TV show that will provide the basis for our tactics today with Greg Kokel, founder and president of Stand to Reason. And we're talking today tactics, a game plan for discussing your Christian convictions. Our phone number for your participation is 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. Back in a moment. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and if you know your TV theme music, you can sort of see an old rumpled guy in a trench coat about now.
There he is.
Kind of going, patting, looking for his glasses, going, oh, wait a minute, here. Or I don't actually seldom watch the show. We're talking about Columbo, and it'll be apparent why in just a moment. Let me reintroduce my guest today, Greg Kokel, who is the founder and president of Stand to Reason, also is an adjunct professor of Christian apologetics at Biola's. Been on dozens of university campuses speaking and writing and talking about Christian convictions. And he's written one of the books we're talking about today is Tactics, a Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. We played the Columbo theme song because you've used that kind of as the basis in your Tactics book. Just to review that, and then we're going to get to a question or two from the audience.
Sure, sure. Lieutenant Columbo is a main character of an old TV show maybe 30 years ago, but he is also the number one TV icon of all time, so a lot of people remember him. And his way of solving a crime was to come into the crime scene and, you know, kind of act stupid and not threatening in any way, and he'd just, you know, start asking questions, you know, something about this thing bothers me, you know, do you mind if I ask you? And so he asked the questions, and this is how he gathers information. And then he uses the questions then finally to pin down the bad guy, to discover who it is and to get his man, as it were, or woman, as the case may be. And so what I've done is I've tried to capture that picture for using questions. And using questions, you know, goes all the way back to Socrates and probably before that, you know, the Socratic method. But it's a fabulous way to maneuver in conversation so that you stay in the driver's seat, but you're not being pushy or offensive usually, and you're giving the other person a chance to talk, you're gathering information. So Lieutenant Columbo to me is the perfect icon for the best way that Christians should maneuver and engage in conversations.
And maybe just to, we mentioned the common first question is, what do you mean by that, right? There's a second,
there's
basically two questions that are key, right?
Right. Well, there's what I've described in the book are three different ways that Columbo could be used, and the first two ways have a model question. So the first way is to gather information. You know, Columbo shows up at the crime scene. He's got to get facts before he can even know how to proceed. And that's the same thing when we meet somebody or somebody expresses their view. Like I mentioned earlier, everything's relative. Well, what do you mean by that is the first model question. There are different ways to express that. I mean, I once asked a witch in Wisconsin whether her jewelry, which was a five-pointed star, a cultic symbol, had any religious significance. And a curious question. She drew her out, and this led to an interesting conversation that's actually in the Tactics book. But what did I say? I said, what do you mean by that, in a sense, regarding her jewelry? Now, once you get the person's point of view, you get clear on all of that, let them talk for a while. Notice you're having an interactive discussion. It's easy, no pressure, no fighting. You're getting information. Then when they have expressed their view really clearly, like I said earlier, everything's relative, then the second use of Columbo is to force them to make an argument or give reasons. I call it reversing the burden of proof. But the second question, model question, is something like, how did you come to that conclusion? Or what are your reasons for that? Or why do you think that that's the case? Or something along that line. So the person who says everything's relative, I want to know, why would you think everything is relative? And what's important here, Neil, is I am going to make the other person, if I can, defend their view, give an account for their view, before I take the responsibility to give a counter argument. In other words, I'm not going to let them have a free ride. I'm not going to let them just say whatever they want, and then they win just by saying it, and it's all my job now to counter. Rather, I am going to put the question to them that requires of them to give some reasons. Remember, the atmosphere here is really relaxed. It's genial. Oh, really? What do you mean by that? Everything's relative. Oh, I think I understand now. And why would you say that, though? Why would you think everything is relative? Now it's their turn. And see what they say. once they've told you what they believe and why they believe it, well, now you've got a whole lot more information, and you can decide where to go from there. And this is where the third use of Columbo comes in. The third use of Columbo, simply put, is to make your point by using questions. Make your point by using questions. So when a person says to me, it's wrong to judge, and I ask them, well, what do you mean by that? He says, well, it's wrong to point out the other person's wrongs, to say what other people are doing are wrong. You shouldn't be doing that. Well, now I've got a question that's meant to exploit a weakness or a flaw. And I'm going to ask him, well, if you think it's wrong to judge, then why are you judging me right now? So this stops people in their tracks, because it never has occurred to them that when they complain about other people being judgmental or intolerant, that they are doing the very thing that they are saying the other person shouldn't do. Now, I could point it out directly, Neil. I could say, you're doing the same thing you're telling me not to do. Gotcha, gotcha. Well, that wouldn't be very helpful. It would be accurate, but it wouldn't be helpful tactically. But instead, if I simply say, well, what if you think it's wrong to judge, then why are you judging me right now? Okay, the ball's in their court. They got to give an accounting for it. And or if you say, if you think being intolerant is thinking that you're right, then why are you being intolerant to my view right now? You think you're right and you think I'm wrong. Why are you being intolerant to me? This stops people completely in their tracks, and I'll tell you why. Because they have never given much thought to their own view. And they just fire these statements out like because they were socialized, as I pointed out, to do so. And if you can see it coming and then you use a final question to exploit a weakness or a flaw, well, this can be very, very productive in a conversation.
And by the way, the book is available. You can find out more about all the books and resources available on the website, the str.org. That's for Stand to Reason. Greg Kokel is the founder and president of Stand to Reason. And the book we're talking about is called Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. And we asked at the beginning of the show, are there some people that have questions or situations? Tim had a conversation, he said, with an unbeliever, and it started calm, but then it became frustrated, and he used it against me later on. So how would you respond? What would you say to that?
I'm not sure what.
Well, he just dropped out. I'll get him back on. Let's go to line one there. And this is Tim. Go ahead. State your question here to Greg.
Hi, Tim.
Hi. I think you answered a lot of my question, but just recently on Facebook, I was with an old classmate of mine, and the issue of the homosexual community came up, and I'm in an area by Madison, Wisconsin, that's very liberal in that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I tried to explain my point of view that physically everything else, and you know, points to it's wrong, not to mention faith-wise. And I kept getting arguments back, and I tried to be calm. By the time the ridiculous of keep saying things over and over again, arguments that didn't make any sense, I was getting more and more frustrated. And by the end of the conversation, he says, well, what are you so upset about? You're supposed to be a Christian. And it's like,
I see what you're saying. Okay, you mentioned something, though, and that's the telltale here for me, and that is that you kept butting into the conversation. We call that the steamroller tactic, and it's actually the tactic I teach is how you defend against somebody who is doing what you ended up doing because you got bugged. So one thing that we have to do in these conversations, especially when they're controversial and they're high-spirited, like the conversations about homosexuality, is we have got to be careful that we don't step on the other person's lines. We have to let them, you know, give them a reasonable amount of time to finish, and then request the same thing for ourselves. We don't want them to interrupt us, but we have to make sure that we don't do that to them. What you did is you gave them an opportunity to give you thump you on the chest, you know, and find something wrong with the way in which you were communicating. The New Testament says we should not be quarrelsome, but have gentleness and reverence. It says in 1 Peter that we should be patient when wronged. These are hard to do when you're in the heat of it, But it you can get better at this, Tim. And I have, over the years, by the grace of God, gotten a lot better at this, trying to show respect to the other person and letting them make their point, and then making my point and asking for the same kind of respect from them.
Well, it sounds like as you were mentioning too, Greg, that if the arguments get more sort of lacking logic, I mean, you need to keep coming back to the questions, sort of, how'd you come to that conclusion, probably, right? Those
right,
kinds of things.
Right. If there is wacky logic, this is where your questions then are meant to deal with the wacky logic. And again, if you can keep from interrupting, but then keep asking questions about the logic, like, well, like I had a homosexual call once and raised these issues on my radio show, and he said, well, as long as I'm not hurting anybody. I said, okay, your parents, when they found out you were homosexual, did that hurt them? He said, yes. Well, then you are hurting somebody, you know. I was just trying to apply his rules, you know. That's just a simple thing. Then he said something else, you know, well, it's natural for me. And I said, well, if it were natural for me to beat up homosexuals, would you say that was okay then? And he didn't want to agree with that. I don't think it is natural, either one, you know, but I'm just pointing at the way he's arguing. So if you see these difficulties, and you do have to see what's wrong with the argument in order to use a question to show what's wrong with it, to demonstrate what's wrong with it. But if you see them, then instead of trying to make your point straight ahead by interrupting, you wait till they're finished, or at least they got a pause and a break where you can step in properly, and then you ask a question that is meant to exploit the weakness or the flaw. That's what I'd suggest for Tim.
Okay. Thank you, Tim, for that call. Let's take another call here before we do a break. Meg's been waiting. Meg, you're on with Greg Kokel. Go ahead with your question or situation.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Funny, this should come up. I was in a business meeting this morning with a woman. We started talking business, and then we started talking family. And she offhandedly shared with me that her 16-year-old son had come to her some years ago and said, I'm not really a boy, I'm a girl. And I was dumbfounded. I just listened, and I thought, I have to say something. You know, how can I say nothing? So I just want to know, how did I do? I said, is there a moral question here for you? And then she basically said, well, I just want my son to be happy and yada, yada. But it was really tough. I wasn't prepared. And
sure. Yeah. Well, Meg, this is a very difficult situation because she is now sharing something that is intimate about her child that is, I think, a significant problem, and even the people involved. You know, I want him to be happy, so, and gee, this is a difficulty, all right? So, that you didn't say anything might have been the best thing under the circumstances. We have to choose the hills that we're going to die on, and sometimes not speaking is the wise thing to do. Look in the book of Proverbs. There are lots of times where it says, shut up, you know.
Yeah.
He who opens wide his lips comes to ruin. You know, he who guards his mouth, there's safety there. In this particular case, it might have been better that you not say anything. However, if you were to say something, you may be asking this question. Now, just so I'm clear, I'm role-playing it right now. So just so I'm clear, your child is physically a boy. Is that right? There are no physical anomalies, right? Oh, no, he's physically a boy. Okay. So he has a body of one gender, but in his mind, he thinks he's another gender. Is that correct? Yes, that's correct. Now, why did I ask the question like that, Meg? I did because, again, it's a Columbo question, just getting information. But I am trying to position this issue in the way it ought to be positioned, that this is a problem, that his body is right, but his mind is confused. And what happens for people oftentimes because of political pressure, that is the way society looks at this, they want to say his mind is right and his body is wrong, so we're going to dress him up like a girl, instead of trying to address his gender confusion. And then when he gets older and he's dressed up like a girl, then he's going to have an operation to mutilate his body. How can that be healthy? The problem here is gender confusion. It's his mind that's amiss here, not his body. And those questions are just meant to gently set the stage for that and get the person thinking. I'm probably not going to want to pursue it too aggressively unless that person invites me deeper in to the personal elements of her life. I'd ask those couple questions just to set the tone a little bit for her thinking, then try to make that be a stone in her shoe to get her thinking about it and let it lie for the moment. Meg, sounds to me like you probably did the wise thing by not speaking under those circumstances.
In a moment, we're going to talk about the stone in the shoe. That's a topic we want to get to with Greg Kokel. Greg is the founder and president of Stand to Reason, and he's written several books, including the one we're referencing today, Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. By the way, the Stand to Reason website is str.org, and I know there's a number of resources and things that can help you in this discussion and the discussions we're going to have. So back with Greg in a moment, and we'll talk about stones in the shoe and more. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number.
Faith Radio's mission is to lead people to Christ and nurture you in your spiritual growth through Christ-centered media. We recently connected online with David from Bangladesh.
I'm so glad to have been introduced to MyFaithRadio.com. I like to listen to Faith Radio, which I get through this address online. It's my wish that God will expand His ministry everywhere in the world.
MyFaithRadio.com crosses borders and even oceans. Log on today at MyFaithRadio.com and join the conversation helping to spread the message of Faith Radio.
Hi, I'm Dick Whitworth, General Manager of Faith Radio. Are you new to the station? Well, welcome. It's great to have you tuning in. We have a new listener packet that's designed for friends just like you. It tells you a little bit about the station, who we are, why we exist, and what we're hoping to accomplish in the Upper Midwest. It's yours free for the asking at MyFaithRadio.com. Check it out. It's MyFaithRadio.com. It's the new listener packet. Request yours today.
Tired of finding yourself intimidated in conversations, you want to increase your confidence and skill in discussions with family, friends, and coworkers about your Christian convictions, and this book we're referencing today would be a great resource for you. It's called Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions, written by Greg Kokel. Greg is the founder and president of Stand to Reason. STR.org is their website, and we'll put a link up on ours as well. Greg speaks on a number of campuses and has written many articles and several books and does a radio show. I've been going on for 25 years now, I think, or so. And we're talking about how we can ask questions. And you mentioned something called just put a stone in their shoe here just a moment ago. Let's expand on that, Greg.
Yeah, I'd like to. Before I do, you mentioned the website, and the people can actually get our podcast on the website. So there are 3 hours a week. That's all it is. It's not burdensome, but the kind of thing, if they like what they've heard so far in this interview, they get 3 hours a week of my own show, podcast for free, download it from str.org. It's real easy, and there's thousands of pages of information for them on other things as well. But the goal that I have when I engage somebody else on what I think might be a spiritual conversation, the goal is not, for me, is not to win them to Christ at that moment. And part of the reason I say that is because most people are not ready. And any harvest that happens is always preceded by, let's call it a season of gardening, all right? You have a lot of gardening first before the harvest. I think a lot of Christians are gardeners, and they don't realize it. They don't harvest, and so they think that they're failures, when in fact, if they thought of themselves more as somebody to help the process along rather than doing the harvesting, they'd be more productive in the kingdom. I'm a gardener. I'm not a harvester. And so my goal when I meet somebody is not to try to win them to Christ or even get to the gospel. I just have a more modest goal. And I said this when I was at University of Toronto 2 weeks ago. I said, I'm not here to convert you. I just want to put a stone in your shoe. I just want to get you thinking. Actually, I said, I just want to annoy you in a good way. They all started laughing because they expect the Christian to annoy them, you know. So I said, okay, I'm going to annoy you, but you'll be glad. I'm going to try to get you thinking. Because if you can leave this talk tonight just with something that, some stone I put in your shoe, you're hobbling out, scratching your head, thinking about it, well, good, I'm happy. So I'm setting my goal rather low here because I'm thinking to myself not as a harvester but a gardener, knowing that gardeners are really important in the process, and I'm just trying to move the person a little further on. So in this chat with Meg a few moments ago, she talked about the woman whose child had a gender confusion, maybe the best thing there is not to take this whole thing on head on, but just to say a few things that will maybe set the tone for her thinking about the concern she's facing and maybe set the stage for a future conversation. That's what I mean by putting a stone in people's shoe.
We should get to another question in a moment, but I know you talk about ambassadors, and I was thinking, you know, ambassadors are strategically positioned to have maximum influence in a foreign culture. And in many ways, we are living in a foreign culture. Just say a word about what it means to be an ambassador and to kind of help our mindset around that.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, Neil, because this is a key point, a key element to Stand to Reason's entire approach. We don't want to just pass out information. We want to try to create a certain type of individual. We call that person an ambassador, and we're taking our cue from 2 Corinthians 5, verse 20, where Paul says, "We are ambassadors for Christ. As though God were speaking through us, we beg of you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God." Notice how Paul is identifying his role as a diplomat, in a sense, and our role as diplomats. I think if we think of ourselves as evangelists, or even, you know, then we're trying to go for the gold, we're trying to get people to sign on the dotted line, maybe before they're ready. We're swinging for the fences. But if we think of ourselves as an ambassador, just to have a kind of a friendly diplomacy as we represent Christ in every circumstance that he gives us an opportunity, well, I think then our interactions are going to be a lot more productive. They're going to be a little bit lower tension, lower energy, at least at first, and will give us more opportunities, I think, to make a difference. And by the way, when I mentioned this idea of putting a stone in people's shoe as a good ambassador, man, this gives encouragement to so many Christians who didn't think that they could be useful in the kingdom because they didn't consider themselves good harvesters. You don't have to be a harvester. Think about gardening. And these folks are getting off the bench and they're making a difference.
Yeah. Let's we'll get time for another call. Bob didn't stay on the line, but he had this point. He said, when a non-believer looks at the practice of stoning in the Old Testament, many of them say, if that's Christianity and God, I want nothing to do with them. How would you respond, or how should they respond?
Well, the first question that I'd ask is does this mean that that person is in principle against all capital punishment? See, I'm not sure if the person who raises the objection objects to stoning as a method of capital punishment or objects to capital punishment in general. So I don't know how to deal with this until I get that information. This is where you get, I think what you get is you get a more clarity on the person's objection, so you don't end up firing at the wrong target here. If his objection is against the method, like against stoning, well, what I'm going to want to try to communicate to him is that was stoning or beheading, or if there was going to be capital punishment, that was the way they did it. And there were reasons why they did it that way. And when you look at the Mosaic Law was a way of restraining the barbarism of the time. It wasn't merely an expression of it. It put requirements and restrictions and all kinds of things. Before that, stoning could happen, capital punishment. You had to have two or three witnesses to the facts, so there was a fair trial. So what I'm going to try to do is I want to probably try to put it in its proper setting, that even though stoning sounds barbaric to us, it was actually in the setting of the time a great advance in the way capital punishment was done, the whole procedure, okay? Now, if a person is against capital punishment in principle, then they have objection against the United States or many of the states in the United States, including California here or Texas or many others, Florida, who actually have capital punishment on the books. But then that becomes an argument against the government, who has capital punishment, which would be an argument against governments here too. So the Bible is only affirming what many of the states already affirm in our country: capital punishment is appropriate for certain offenses. So it depends on where that person is at. That will determine the direction I want to go in that situation.
Again, just asking those important questions to get more information, and then to have an opportunity to frame the conversation and to go from there. I'm looking at just the mission statement of Stand to Reason. Stand to Reason trains Christians to think more clearly about their faith and to make an even-handed, incisive, yet gracious defense for classical Christianity and classical Christian values in the public square. And Greg, is it getting harder to do that? We've just got a minute left. Is it getting harder or easier?
It's getting harder because the culture is getting farther to the left, and therefore they're getting more hostile to virtually everything about Christianity, Jesus being the only way, abortion, homosexuality, that is the moral issues that seem to follow from a biblical worldview. It's not just that they hold these views, they're forcing them on us. Christians are in a defensive posture when it comes to homosexuality. We're not forcing our view on them. They are forcing it on us, and they're using the law to do it. And all religious pluralism, the whole tolerance thing, the way it's been distorted and twisted, these are all things that make it more difficult for the Christian to make a case, which means they should be more capable tactically to maneuver, which is why I wrote the book Tactics.
And again, it's a great resource. I would recommend it to you. Tactics, a game plan for discussing your Christian convictions, and to find out about the other resources, and even to catch a podcast of Greg's radio program. Greg is founder and president of Stand to Reason, and you go to their website for information and details, str.org. Pretty simple, str.org. Greg Kochel holds master's degrees in both apologetics and philosophy, and has hosted a radio show for now 25 years, and we're glad that he carved out a little bit of time to join us today on Connecting Faith. But Greg, always good to visit with you. Appreciate the opportunity to connect again.
Thank you, Neil. I look forward to the next time.
You're listening to Connecting Faith, and again, if you missed a part of today's program, you can always catch the podcast here on our website at myfaithradio.com and go to the Connecting Faith show page.